Hey, listener, this is Ralph from Beer, Blood, and the Bayou, reminding you that if you love our podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Classmates.com, or wherever you consume our show. We also want to remind you that if you have any questions, comments, or would like to unload on our latest podcast, please call us at 405-806-0476 or write us at listener@beerbloodbayou.com. Thanks.
Beer, Blood, and the Bayou contains adult language, graphic descriptions of delicious hop treats, and real crimes perpetrated in and around the greater Houston metropolitan area. Viewer discretion is advised. Bitches.
It's 9:26 in the morning.
Wow.
On a Monday.
No, it's...
We quit our jobs.
It's Saturday official. Morning.
We're full time.
Yeah. Well, actually, what we need to do is put a job listing for podcast producer.
Yeah.
In
producer.
Craigslist.
On yeah,
Craigslist.
I just... I don't know. It's a combination between my ineptitude, my equipment, and my desire to produce this podcast.
It's just sheer lack of motivation until you actually see us in here. You do nothing with this podcast.
That's true. So I've been up since 5:45 in the morning.
Trying to figure out
how to do it. I do not have as much vigor and much pep in my step as Brower likes to call it. This is Brower's witching hour.
Okay, everyone knows. Well, not everyone. Brower is a morning guy for sure.
Yeah, no shit.
He likes his mornings.
Goes to bed at 5 o'clock.
I know.
No. I finished the Astros game last night.
They have TVs at Luby's cafeteria?
Oh, yes, they do.
Get that Luan plate. Watch the Astros.
Give me that half piece of fish.
Half cod, macaroni and cheese, and a roll.
Yeah. I'm so fucking tired right now.
Yeah. Hey, James, what are you doing after this podcast?
Why do you ask?
He doesn't want to.
I'm going to. Okay, well, if you're going to call me out, I'm going to probably... CrossFit for a few hours.
Hey, real quick, though.
Well, you have been looking pretty...
Hey, can we stop for just 1 second? I just want to note something. Mm-hmm. James just gave Brower the look of death. I mean, like, not even... Like, he wasn't... I want you guys to know that none of this is an act. Like, you know, like, he listens to his morning shows, and they're all, like, you know, horrible acting, playful together and all that stuff. That doesn't exist here.
We truly hate each other.
This is reality.
This is
true reality TV.
Well, if you think about it, I guess... James and I have known each other since we were teenagers, and I've known you, Ralph. Well, we have known you since you were a teenager.
So technically.
That's right.
God, 20 years. Wait.
Are we talking about he still acts like
18 teenagers. To 28 to 38?
Yeah, no, it's like 20 years.
Yeah, oh, my God. I'm so old.
Yeah, so we've definitely learned to hate one another.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're really good at it, too.
Yeah.
And friends hate each other.
Hey, do you guys here. Can you hear how deep my voice is? So this is my voice when I roll out of bed.
Is your wake up voice?
Yeah, and then as the day goes on, it gets higher and higher and more annoying. But this is proof that yes, I actually did go through
puberty. Yeah, you're a little pitchy, dog. You're a little pitchy.
You should record your voicemail.
Yeah,
in the morning.
No, that's been your move since high school, man.
And I would record your favorite meal at every fast food place so you can just hit play when you get there and be like, I need a number three.
Yeah. As I've mentioned in this podcast, there's a lot of times when I go up to drive-through windows and I get all right, ma'am, please pull through.
Why don't you go early in the morning and order food for the day?
Yeah, it's...
right when you wake up.
Brower loves those stories. Like, whenever it happens, like, he's the first guy I call.
Getting to live one of those is like seeing Bigfoot.
Brower worked at a fast food place.
That's right. I've told that story before. I spent a 4-hour shift at Wendy's.
Why is it though that like that its story just never gets less funny?
I know.
I mean, I've heard it 100 times. Just go ahead and tell. I mean, I know we've done it before, but just go ahead and tell the story. I love the story.
I had to have a job for some silly reason or another, and I knew that I could get a job at Wendy's. I was sure I could. I went in on a Wednesday. The manager loved me, and I just gave it right back to her. I was like, this is great. I'm super excited. She's like, would you like to start today? And I was like, of course. She gives me like a paper uniform or whatever they had. And I got dressed, and I wore my little Wendy's outfit and watched about 2.5 hours of videos on VHS tapes and came out and started sweeping the floor and breaking down the salad bar. And
cutting square patties for the burgers.
That's right. No, they came frozen. So I did see something pretty disgusting, though.
Go. What was it?
A couple of last cars that came through the drive-thru, they had already tossed all the lettuce out. And the lettuce was a huge pile on top of the trash in the trash can.
No.
Might have reached over and just, I mean, to be totally fair, the lettuce that they used never touched any other trash, but it was just, shaved it right off the top.
But it was in the trash.
That's... No, but I will say that it did not cross the barrier of the top rim of the trash can.
Yeah.
So it, you know, if it's on top of the trash can, is it then trash? I mean, yeah, I guess it is. You know, if like you're playing trash can Jenga, and
well, if the whole trash can was full of lettuce, it would be just a lettuce container.
Technically, that's right.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. So
I mean, yeah. So let's say they took
lettuce the out top, of the lettuce. Maybe 1/16 of it was lettuce, but even still. So that was my that was the ending of my first shift, and then the manager when I was leaving for the day, she says, she's like, okay, well, here's your schedule. And it was Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. And I was like, boo, all right, yeah. I'll be there. And this was a Wednesday night, so I go home Thursday. Friday comes around. I'm supposed to be there at 5:30. The phone rings at 5:35 at the house, and I answer it. And the manager says, hey, this is like Julie over at whatever at Wendy's, and
well, burgers aren't going to cook themselves.
Yeah, she's like, did you forget you have a shift today? And I was like, oh, my car is not. It's a car thing. And she says, oh, where do you live? We'll come get you. And I was like, I gotta go. I got to go. And then hung up the phone. And never went back. Oh, wait. No, I did. I went and got a $19 check.
Oh, you did? You got back. You went to get your check?
Yeah, that's right.
You know I worked at that Domino's right near there.
Oh, yeah.
I did such a good job there that the manager, she invited me out to the local park there in Tomball to go rollerblading one Saturday, which was, at the time, I didn't think anything of it, but now looking back, probably hitting on me. But then she asked me the next week, if I would be interested in going to Domino's manager training.
Hey, oh,
no. And I did it. I went.
Oh, you did?
On a Saturday, and I saw firsthand. No, I'm not downplaying Domino's. I
mean, yeah.
Everyone needs management, but a lot of really serious people.
Serious
about pizza.
Serious pizza
and people. And I realized right then that this, I got to tell her that I'm not going to go into upper management,
yeah,
because these people were lifers.
Oh, you think you have to have a love for pizza, love for the craft?
Did you get any like lots of like applause, and then somebody saying, "Yeah, let's get some energy in this room."
I was the youngest one there by like.
You guys over there say Dom, and you guys say nose. Dom nose.
I mean, it was
Shibuya.
Serious
Shibuya. No. Do you remember that, the Shibuya thing?
No.
Oh, God, it's so horrible. Like, anybody listening, just Google Shibuya Reddit training session, and it's like some corporate training session, and they're, like, forcing their employees to sing this fucking horrible song, and it's cringeworthy. It's fucking terrible.
Good story.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Have you ever paid someone in Hot Wings to watch your car?
You did.
I did downtown. My friend Matt and I went to a concert.
Yeah.
And there was a homeless guy walking up who maybe he wasn't homeless. I don't know. But he looked like he was there to break into cars. And he said, hey, you need to pay to park here, which clearly it was not a pay to park place.
Yeah.
And my buddy Matt and I worked together at the Domino's, and we had the full gear on, in the Domino's shirt, shorts, and a Domino's belt.
Wait, you're going to the concert in the Domino's uniform?
It was just, we thought it would be funny, and we really wanted to get, it was a Nixon's concert.
Oh, okay.
And that really the guy's like, hey, you need to give me money to park here, and we translated that into our car will be windows broken if we don't give this guy something.
Yeah.
We had just enough money to get into the show, so we gave him our leftover hot wings, and he took that as payment.
It's the barter system, man. Doesn't get any better than that.
So, quick question, though. Were they boneless or bone-in?
Back then, I don't think boneless were a thing.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think they had boneless yet,
just figured that out a decade ago. They engineered those.
Yeah.
I think A&M University figured that out.
Yeah, some sort
seedless
of.
Seedless watermelon and chicken with no bones.
It was just, born without a vertebrae. Just fucking slithered like a snail.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's a horrible thing to even think about. This is Beer Blood in the Bayou.
Hey, everybody.
I'm joined with Mr. Josh James.
Yep.
And Mr. Ray Brower.
A good morning, sir.
I'm Ralph Sweetwater. And here we are on a fucking Saturday morning after an Astros loss. And by the time you guys hear this, hopefully, we will be in the World Series.
That's right. It's like you're swinging through there, like as if you're running for president. When I'm elected president,
yeah, exactly.
blah, blah, blah.
Right. No, but dude, they're going to win, right? I mean,
oh, for sure.
Do Cole's pitching tonight?
No.
No, he's not.
No, Cole is. Is it bullpen tonight?
He's pitching game 7.
I got into an argument last night about
fist fight.
No, yeah, fist fight. I swear people were going back and forth about this.
I've already locked it in on ESPN.
Can you Google that?
I'm telling you, he's not. He's game 7.
He's game 7.
If we come to that.
Well, probably will if it's game. Fucking bullpen.
Well,
it's not bullpen. It's the other guy.
I don't know.
Who? Quigley or whatever. Hang on.
I don't know.
Next topic. I'll
look. Did you say Quigley? Quigley down under?
You know who's been kicking ass for the Astros?
Who?
Josh James.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, middle relief.
God, that's so weird. Yeah, so we're watching the game the other night, and all of a sudden, Josh James steps up to the mound.
I forgot that I played baseball.
And he looks nothing like you. Not even remotely, but that's okay.
We have the same height.
Yeah.
6'8".
Yeah. Are you guys ready to get in the beer?
Yeah.
All right. So here's what
we're going to drink this early in the morning.
Yep. So I brought this beer.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
I don't have a beer this morning. I'm not doing it. I was going
to... Too early, huh?
Yeah, fuck it. I can't. But I was going to make you guys Bloody Marys, and then I lost all motivation, so I didn't do that either. Maybe it'd be really cool, for us to sit here and drink Bloody Marys.
Let's wrap up this podcast, huh?
Yeah, I guess we're almost done. So, I couldn't fucking do it, man. I'm really sorry. I hope you guys understand.
Tell us a beer story.
A beer story?
We would love to hear something.
I don't really have one. Buffalo Bayou, they're about to open their huge fucking brewery. It's like $14 million brewery. It's going to be open in a couple months.
Oh,
I'm pretty excited about that.
I saw the blueprints on that one.
Did you bid it? Were you guys going to bid it or what?
No, some contractor had already ordered them.
Oh, sorry.
And said they were the best in town and they jumped on it.
Well, because do you remember when we interviewed Drew? Oop. Hey, Brower, do you remember when you interviewed Troy Witherspoon?
Yeah.
I remember he said, I think it was, we interviewed him in like October or something like that.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, we're going to have the brewery finished by summer. If you go back and you listen to the interview, you're like, the hell you will.
Yeah, no, you won't.
And here we are like.
He's like, I believe my contractor. Yeah.
And here we are, end of October, they're not open. But I fucking knew it, but they were being very optimistic.
Well, accentuate the positive.
Yeah.
At the stage of the project where they were at, there's no way they were going to meet that timeline. Which, by the way, I got a funny story. So, I'm building a location for my company. I'm building a new location. So my mornings start at the job site, and at the job site we have a nice job site trailer. It's locked with the combination lock, and then
there's a door going into your trailer.
That's right. So then we have a on-site port-a-can that's, kind of for...
This sounds super
fancy. Staff only, right? So, yeah. And then we have a combination lock on that. Well, my mornings are pretty routine. I drink about 8 cups of coffee or so. And
healthy.
Yeah, about 40-plus ounces of water. And so every single morning. So as you would imagine, that causes a lot of
movement.
A lot of flow through my body, a lot of water moving through my body.
I'm glad our podcast is.
So I don't want to get too graphic and weird, but I'll just say that sometimes if I hit traffic and I'm in the car too long, it's I have to number one really quickly.
Number one.
That's right. So
do it in the car.
I could.
With a bottle.
I could. Yeah. Or I could be driving on 99, trying to, you know, going like 80 miles an hour.
No exits.
trying to get to my exit and then get to my job site trailer or porta can.
Forget the combo.
Fumbling, trying to get that combo. And I wanted to say how desperate that is. It's like, you know, normally it's totally fine. I have it all planned out. I can usually go hour very easily. But sometimes when I hit traffic, it's just like, oh, God. So it has not been fun sometimes. Like, it's like I'm trying to defuse a bomb. The yellow or the red is like, ah!
Yeah.
But that's the fun part.
Do you ever? Now I think, like, you know, if you're ever like in a traffic jam, you look to your left, you look to your right, like how many people are just holding that shit until they get to work? I mean, basically, it's a freeway full of people who need to take a shit.
I always think about how many people are crying
about their life.
Yeah. I mean, because I've heard be said, one of the only places you can truly be true to yourself is when you're driving a car by yourself in traffic. So that's when the real you comes out. You know, that's when the racist in you comes out. That's
when we should record.
Remote. What's that? In our cars.
We should do a traffic remote cast and just so tell depressing. The truth about each other.
And the other thing I think about, too, is like, let's say like you're on your way to work Monday morning. Could you imagine perishing in a fucking car accident?
On your way to work. Shit, dying on the way to work.
Yeah. But it happens all the time, right?
Well, I didn't want to get depressed today, but that's correct.
I just want you to know that, by the way, the murder I'm going to do, it's probably the most fucking depressing thing you've heard in your entire life. But go ahead. Sorry.
How about getting picked up for warrants on the way to work?
Oh, yeah. Is this a personal experience? Do you know somebody?
No, actually. No. I did. I had traffic tickets at like a... And expired inspection tickets and a parking ticket and something else, and I had that happen. Not on the way to work. While I was at work.
While you're at work.
Yeah. I just went. They just made me pay it. They drove me down there to go pay it.
I used to work for a guy that he owned the company, and he was one of these people that if you did not work a full 40 hours a week, you were not a valuable employee.
You're trash.
Right. So one day he had me go across town to deliver or to pick up a check or something. And it was about an hour drive and it was around 4:15. I got in a lot of traffic. I had a blowout. So I called him and I was like, hey, I had a blowout. I had a tow truck guy already take me to Discount Tire. They're about to replace my tire. And it was like, by this time, it was like 4:15. I could have made it back to the office.
Yeah.
Is the timing of this. And he said, oh, man, that's sad. Well, hey, look, so, you know, the West Coast is still open. So if you want, just come on up here and we'll finish out the day at the office. And I'd been in traffic for like an hour on the side of the road for 20 minutes. Then I was at Discount Tire for 30 minutes getting a tire. And he's like, come back to work.
Wow.
And work like 15 minutes till 5.
That is insane.
Some people, man.
I work with people like that too. Like
they're the most inefficient.
Well, they have this value about being seen or being in the office. It's like the most important thing.
And I guarantee you, they are literally the most inefficient people in your office.
Most of those people, yeah.
Have you ever had someone that does basically what you do, but somewhere else, tell you like, "Hey, God, how do you have time in the day to finish all of your tasks?" And then you start thinking like, really good or really bad?
This is what I think, right? So like a lot of people, peers or whatever that I worked with in my career over various jobs and all that stuff, doing the exact same thing that I'm doing, I finish something in 2 hours that they're working on all fucking day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it's just the ways of working and how people do it, you know.
Well, a lot of them, they socialize too much too, or they'll get sidetracked.
Well, the biggest thing for me is I noticed that people, they get too drugged down on insufficient details. Insignificant details that just don't matter.
I'm good with vocabulary.
You are. You're very good, and I'm very poor at it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, yeah, so people just get dragged down into details that just do not matter to the final outcome of whatever it is you're working on. And there's also people like that who fucking drag the entire group down because they just can't fucking... I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. It's sad.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, no, it's like when someone tells you they've done 4 hours of research for every employment section.
Exactly, yeah.
You really got to question that.
Yeah, 4 hours.
Or they're really good and serious about what they do.
And then they read the story and you're like, where did those fucking 4 hours go?
Because it's so in-depth.
It's so lackluster and...
All right.
Oh, well, we're being dicks.
Oh, yeah.
Like oh, man. Right? Are you oh, he's mad.
I know.
Mad. You look upset.
Type in that other podcast. And tomorrow at 10, sin. I have no inner monologue.
God. Okay. So, you guys, we'll wrap this section up and we're going to go to the blood section.
Get impressed.
I got a doozy.
Let's do it.
Yeah, you'll see. All right. We will be right back after this.
Yeah. You know, Magnum PI is 74.
And we're back.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Whoa, go
one
ahead.
Quick thing.
Don't yell.
Yeah. I feel terrible because I know we didn't have a beer section, but I do have a beer story.
Oh, okay.
Dustin over at Bearded Fox gave me a crowler of their Oktoberfest for us to try out on the podcast.
Yeah.
Drank it all the way here.
Drank it all the other night. I couldn't do it.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was delicious, too.
What a dick.
Yeah, no.
We'll give a review on it.
It was good.
That's good.
All right, good.
Brower approved.
Oh, Brower approved, for sure.
Brower approved.
Yeah, I'm going there today, I think, and I'm praying they have their Fox Zero, their cream ale.
What makes an Oktoberfest beer?
Dark grain, malty, German purity law. Do I need to go any further?
No.
Okay. I can't pronounce it. It's like...
October.
No, it's
Oktoberfest.
Like...
October.
There's a German purity law, and basically it says that you're only going to use hops,
nine,
water, yeast, and grain, and that's it.
Boring.
And it's like rice. I can't say it.
We're going to get a professional and explain it.
Yeah. Anyhow. Okay. Well, good. Good beer story. I like it.
That's right.
All right. So today, this story that I'm going to talk about, it's been on my mind probably since the year 2000.
Okay.
And this is a murder or a series of murders that fundamentally affected the way that I look at humanity and kind of shaped some of my, what's the best way to say this?
Hopefully it's faster than.
I don't want to.
Well, first of all, thanks for making this murder all about you.
Yeah. And I'm hoping it's a 2-hour one.
Oh, it's long. Yeah. All right. So this case, it shaped the way I look at the criminal justice system, my viewpoints on the death penalty.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it just completely, this happened when I was like 20 years old. I was at a dinner here in Houston and some of my family, they were down from Wichita and we started to get into like a political discussion. And I said, oh yeah, I'm, anti-gun, anti-death penalty. And my brother-in-law, he said, well, what do you think about the Carr brother case, the Wichita massacre? And I'm like, Wichita Massacre? What are you talking about? I haven't heard anything about it. He's like, I'll send you something. And then what he sent me is what I'm going to read today. And what I'm going to read today is probably really, really, really tough to listen to. But I just want to kind of get in. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, listener discretion advice. There are some parts I don't know if I'm going to read them because it's just so graphic and so intense. But I'm going to read you what he sent to me, and so what I'm about to read, it's not some biased news article, it's not some blog post, is literally a court document, and this is what was sent to me. And like I said, this is kind of what changed a lot of my perception around criminal justice, around the death penalty. So the first part I'm going to read, I'm just going to kind of set the stage from a Wikipedia article. So the Wichita Massacre, also known as the Wichita Horror, was a spree of random robberies, assaults, and rapes and murders perpetrated from December 7th to the 14th, 2000, by brothers Reginald and Jonathan Carr against several people in the city of Wichita, Kansas. In this period, the Carrs killed 5 people and a dog in the course of robberies and assaults, robbed another man, and severely wounded a woman. The crime shocked Wichitanians and incited a boom of sales in guns, locks, and home security systems. The brothers were tried and convicted on multiple counts, including for kidnapping, robbery, rape, 4 counts of capital murder, and 1 count of first-degree murder.
I remember this.
They were both sentenced to death in October of 2002. All right, so like I said, the first two incidents, one was a carjacking, One was a robbery in which the female who was robbed, she died a few days later in the hospital. The incident I want to focus on is the quadruple homicide that happened on December 14th. So the third incident began, and this is right, like I said, this is from court documents. In the court documents, they don't actually list their first and last names, so I'm going to go ahead and have Brower read them off.
Yeah, it's Brad Haka, Aaron Sander, Heather Mueller, Jason Befort, and Linda Walenta.
Yeah. So the first four of those, these are the people, the first four names that he read off, these are the people who were murdered. And the last person was the lady who was carjacked and robbed. So the third incident began on December 14th, 2000, at a home shared by Aaron and Brad and Jason at 12727 Birchwood, the middle unit of a triplex at the intersection of 127th and Birchwood. And then the surviving victim, her name's Holly, and they never give her last name, who was the girlfriend of Jason, was with Jason at the home. Holly had her dog with her as well. Aaron and his friend, Heather, also were at home, as was Brad. Holly and Jason, they began getting ready for bed around 10:30. Holly pulled her hair back and fastened it in a plastic clip and made sure the front door was locked, and then came to bed. Holly's dog was in Jason's bedroom with Holly and Jason. A few minutes later, the porch light came on. Holly and Aaron talking to someone whose voice she did not recognize. Then Jason's bedroom door burst open, and a tall man with a gun came through the doorway. Jason screamed as a gunman yanked the covers off the bed. A second man holding on to Aaron by the shirt came into the room and pushed Aaron on the bed with Holly and Jason. That man was also armed. The two intruders asked if anyone else was in the house, and were told Brad was downstairs. One of the intruders went downstairs to get Brad, while the other stayed in the bedroom. The intruder who stayed upstairs kept demanding to know if there was anyone else in the house, saying, "Don't lie, don't lie." Aaron eventually told him that Heather was in the other upstairs bedroom. When the intruder who had gone downstairs returned to the bedroom with Brad, he was carrying a golf club, and he ordered Brad onto the floor at the foot of the bed. One of the intruders retrieved Heather from the other bedroom and told her to get on the floor in Jason's bedroom as well. The intruders demanded to know where the phones in the house were and whether there was a safe. One of them looked around the house while the others stood guard over the five friends. At one point, the intruders also said that someone needed to shut the fuck up, Holly's dog, or they would shoot it. Eventually, the dog was muzzled. The intruders also demanded to know who among Heather, Aaron, Brad, Jason, and Holly had money. When none of them had any cash, the intruders asked who had ATM cards. Each raised his or her hand, and the intruders asked each how much money he or she had in the bank. After obtaining the information, the intruders had whispered a discussion. They then ordered the five victims to remove their clothes. The intruders then pulled out all of the clothes in the closet in Jason's bedroom, ordered the five into the closet, and told them to sit down. They were threatened not to speak to each other. The intruders then conversed about wanting to watch the two women engage in sex acts and then go to the bar area outside of Jason's bedroom. So apparently outside of his bedroom, there's what would assume is like a bar at home or some sort of, wet bar or something like
kind
that.
Kind of a big house here.
I guess so. I don't know. I mean, they're in a triplex. I mean, so it's not like a huge, massive house. So, all right. So they pulled two girls out of the closet, and they demanded that they had oral sex with each other. The intruders also demanded that the two women use their fingers to penetrate each other, and the women complied. So during these acts, both intruders watched and made further demands, telling the women what to do. And there's like some specific quotes here. Which I'm not going
to... Yeah, I was about to say, do we need to read those?
No, I'm not going to go into those. When Heather was performing oral sex on Holly, one of the intruders hit Holly's knee so that he could get a better view of what was happening. Next, the intruders brought each of the three male victims out of the bar area one at a time and ordered each of them to have sexual intercourse with Holly. Although one of the intruders had thrown a shirt or another piece of clothing over Holly's face, she remained able to see her feet distinguish between the three male victims during these acts. The first was Brad, second was Jason, and the third was Aaron. At some point during these acts, Heather was moved from beside Holly to the closet. All right, so we're getting pretty deep into this. So, guys, thoughts?
Well, it sounds horrific, and I do remember the story. Excuse me, I remember watching a Dateline about this, or a 2020.
Yeah,
and my old boss, like 15, 16 years ago, up in Dallas, he was from Wichita. He knew these guys. He knew all these people. I remember him telling me about that. This was probably in 2005. He told me about it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a pretty horrific. It's I mean,
wasn't there a documentary or movie about this?
That's what I just said.
No, yeah. I mean, that Dateline's different. I'm talking like a full blown.
Dateline is a documentary.
2 hour. Because I vaguely remember this.
Yeah,
but I don't remember all this going on.
I think there's some other. This isn't a subject that you may not see anything ever come up about this. I think there's some touchy.
Yeah, there's some touchy political ramifications.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that the two assailants, if you will,
yeah,
were the age they were. I thought they were much older.
Yeah,
but I guess we're going to go into that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. So the next part of the court document, it goes into some stuff that I just don't feel comfortable reading out loud. But basically, just to kind of get a gist of what they're saying here, they're forcing each other, the five people, to have sex with each other. The guys are unable to perform because of the circumstances of the situation, which is fucking terrible. And then they're just putting guns up to their heads and saying, if you guys don't do this, we're going to fucking kill you. It's literally the most horrible fucking scenario you could possibly ever imagine.
Well, there's one thing you have to think in this, if you're in this situation. If they're threatening your life and they're telling you they're going to kill you no matter what, like, if you don't do this, I'm going to fucking kill you. And you can see their face, they've already killed you.
Yeah.
So you have no choice but to only fight. You must fight. You only fight. Once you see their face and they threaten to kill you, you must kill them first.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is the correct way, but a lot of times that doesn't happen.
Well, of course not. I mean, people, look, I don't know.
And it's also easier to say than do if we're in that position.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, for sure. But
that's a better way of saying that.
Yeah. But, I mean, you would hope to, that you, in that situation, that you would know that your fight or flight instinct kicks in and it goes to fight, especially when you put together that you have no choice because they're going to kill you. You've seen their faces.
Well, but there are a lot of cases they start relating to the assailant and work their way out of it.
You're talking about the Stockholm syndrome.
Well, not to that extent.
You mean they start to feel sorry for them?
Well, they, you know,
if they
start conversations.
If they
Stockholm is kind of, you eventually just kind of...
you participate almost, in the act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean,
okay. Over time.
Okay. Well, if you are with your four best friends and you've been stripped down all of your clothes and they've put you in a closet and they've told you they're going to fucking kill you if you don't do these certain things, understand that they are going to kill you.
That's
and then
correct.
You should do whatever you want to do at that point because they're going to fucking kill you. You should choose your own manner of death.
Yeah, because you're probably going to be put into a position that's even worse than the one you are in now. Maybe tied up or handcuffed. At this point, if you're, say, you're in a closet and they've already told you that, you probably have a better chance of fighting than an hour later if you're handcuffed or tied up and then you're really not able to do anything.
That's right.
Start fighting while you can is Brower's motto.
All right. So continuing on. So there was basically another hour or so of these guys forcing these five individuals to have sexual relations with each other. Again, there's some more stuff here that I just can't read because I can't fucking do it. So if you guys want to look it up, all you have to do is Google Case Law Wichita Massacre, and you can read the details. I just can't read it out loud. All right, so after multiple sessions of being threatened to be killed because, you know, these dudes, they can't perform, Holly had seen enough of the two intruders that she was able to differentiate between the two of them. The one she referred to as the first was taller, thinner, black male who was wearing an orange and black sweater with the word FUBU on it, black jeans and a leather coat and some kind of boots. Intruder Holly referred to as the second was stockier than the other and was wearing a black leather coat. After the chorus victim-on-victim sex acts, the stockier of the two intruders took Brad to a series of ATMs. Before they could leave, there was a problem finding his car keys, which caused the intruders to say that someone had better find his or her fucking keys or someone would be shot. So while Brad was gone with the stockier intruder, the taller, thinner intruder ordered Holly out of the closet. He ordered her to get on all fours, and then he raped her. And there's some other stuff in here, which I'm just not going to get into. She did notice the gun. So the gun was 4 inches to 5 inches long. He set it on the floor, while he was doing this to her. The other gun that she saw with the other intruder, it was a black gun. So when the taller, thinner intruder returned, Holly to the closet, he ordered Heather out, and then he raped her as well. So it's just, you know, back and forth, sexual assault and rape of all these people. Aaron, one of the guys who was in the closet, just kept saying over and over again, this shouldn't happen this way. And he was put back in the closet. Brad and the stalker intruder were away from the home for about 30 minutes. The stalker intruder then took Jason to two ATMs. Jason and the intruder were gone about 20 minutes. There followed a discussion about which of the remaining victims would leave next with the stalker intruder. Holly said she would go. She got out of the closet, put on a white sweatshirt, and took her ATM card out of her purse. The stalker intruder took her through the front doors to the outside and told her to get into the driver's side of Jason's silver Dodge Dakota pickup. The intruder sat slouched back in the corner of the passenger seat with what Holly believed was a gun in his hand. At the Commerce Bank ATM, to which Holly drove at the stockier intruder's direction, Holly withdrew $350, the maximum amount she could do in one withdrawal. She then unsuccessfully attempted to withdraw $200 and then another $150. So this exhausted all the money that she had. When she leaned out of the truck to take the cash out of the machine, the stockier guy groped her and continued to sexually assault her.
I guess that part they caught on camera. You know, the cameras.
Like an ATM camera? Yeah, probably.
That's awful.
Yeah. At what point during this trip, Holly asked the stalker intruder if he was going to shoot her and the other victims, and he said no. She then asked him if he promised not to shoot them, and he said, yeah, I'm not going to shoot you. Also, during the trip to the ATM, the stalker intruder asked Holly if the other intruder had intercourse with her. When Holly said that he had, the stalker intruder wanted to know if she had enjoyed it. Mm. Jesus fucking Christ.
Right.
To appease him, Holly said yes. She had seen what she believed to be a gun in his lap. The stalker intruder also asked if she ever had sex with a black person and if it was better with the other guy. When Holly and the stalker intruder were walking back into the house, he told her it was too bad they had not met under other circumstances.
Wow.
Because she was kind of cute and she could have dated.
Guy's delusional.
Good God.
She replied, kind of, yeah, and then asked, what does that mean? And then Holly responded with that she wasn't really having a good time. Mm. So when Holly returned to the closet, she told Aaron, Brad, and Jason, hey, I think we're all going to be okay. I asked him, and he said he's not going to shoot us. Aaron was the next to leave the home with the stalker intruder. Holly and Aaron put on pants and a shirt before they left. While Aaron was gone, the taller, thinner intruder opened the closet door and offered the remaining victims some whiskey, which they refused. Holly then heard someone handling a popcorn tin and a change jar. She heard the taller, thinner intruder ask Heather, who was outside the closet at the time, whose is this? And I do that in quotes because that's what it says. But Heather said she did not know, but it was probably Holly's. He then asked which of the male victims was Holly's boyfriend. Heather said it was Jason. The taller intruder then opened the closet door and asked Jason. When Jason identified himself, the intruder asked him if the item that had been found was the only one of its kind. Jason said yes. The item was an engagement ring Jason had purchased but had not yet given to Holly.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, man, this is, like I said, this really, really makes you understand the depths of the human soul and what people are capable of.
Well, I wouldn't know if it's the depths of the human soul, but the depths to which a person could sink to.
Right.
And this level of depravity is like nothing you've ever heard.
Right. So when Aaron returned, the stockier intruder told Holly to leave the closet and pushed her into the dining room by jabbing her in the back with something that she assumed was a gun. He said, "Don't worry, I'm not going to shoot you yet." Mm. The stockier intruder then made Holly get down on all fours, and then he raped her. And then there's some other stuff, which I'm going to go ahead and not repeat, because I can't read that. All right, so Holly went to the bathroom, but when she opened the door, she saw a taller intruder raping Heather from behind. All right, so that's the last I'm going to describe of any of the in the rape or sexual assault. So as you guys probably can see,
terrible.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. I mean, these women, these men are being subjected to this stuff over and over and over again.
And right. I don't know if you recorded it, but you said earlier that it made you question the death penalty, and I can see why.
Yeah. I mean, after this, I mean, there's stuff like this that happens all the time, but the thing is the news reports, they don't go into this level.
I don't know if it's all the time.
Well, not all the time, but my point is, though, is that people are treated like this, you know, in crimes all the time. And
oh, yeah, there
the
are.
Details, right? You know, like, for example, the engagement ring.
Or the details don't come out.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's a reason these details came out in this story.
Right, exactly. And so this is my point is, this is what did it for me, okay? And this was the case that where I said, okay, these people, they don't deserve to live. And then you start reading to other things and other incidents, and you realize, holy shit, people are fucking horrible. When I read this, I was like 20 years old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I never experienced that type of brutality, or never even heard that level of description of how someone could treat somebody. So it was just completely and totally shocking. All right. So at some point, the intruders used cleaning solution to wipe various surfaces and things in the house. When they finished the task, all five victims were taken into the garage. Holly, Heather were wearing nothing but sweaters. Aaron was still wearing pants and a shirt. Brad and Jason were naked. So Holly, Heather were directed to get into the trunk of a beige Honda Civic belonging to Aaron. The intruders then tried to get all three of the men into the trunk, but they couldn't fit. Holly and Heather were then put into the to the back seat of the Honda, and the men were put into the trunk. Holly was then directed to get into the passenger side of Jason's truck. After some discussion between the intruders, as the stockier intruder was taking Holly to the truck, the taller, thinner individual said, "If she gives you any trouble, let me know, and I can take care of that." One intruder drove away from the Birchwood home, first in the Civic, followed by the stockier, heavier intruder in the truck. As she rode with the stockier intruder, Holly asked him where they were going. He said they were going somewhere to drop the five victims off away from their cars and their home. Again, Holly was able to see the other intruder's face at this point, and he was making no effort to keep her from looking at him. Holly noted that the clock in the truck showed it was 2:07 a.m. The Honda and the truck were...
And that's good that, not to interrupt you, but that's good that she's observant like this.
Yeah.
That comes in handy, obviously, later.
Right, but... The point I think they're trying to make here is that at this point, he doesn't give a fuck that she's looking at him because he knows he's going to fucking kill her.
Right.
All right. So the Honda and the truck were driven to a soccer field on 29th Street, and the intruders got out. So just a side note here, it's December in Kansas.
Snowing.
Fucking
probably.
Snowing. It is like, I don't know what the temperature was that night, but it was below freezing. Okay. And some of these guys were naked, right? And then the girls, they just have sweatshirts on. So the intruders got out. Holly was ordered to get into the driver's seat of the Civic. The two intruders talked to each other for a couple minutes. And then the male victims were brought out of the trunk and made to kneel in front of the Civic. At one point, Holly turned to Heather and she said, "Oh my God, they're going to shoot us." She and Heather were then directed to get out of the car. Holly knelt next to Jason and Heather and knelt by Aaron. Holly saw the other two intruders were standing fairly close together. She then heard a shot, and everyone started screaming. Aaron was pleading, "Please no, please no." And then he heard three more shots. Holly then felt an impact on the back of her head, and everything went gray. She remained kneeling, and then she was kicked over and fell forward. She heard talking, heard one of the truck's doors shut, heard the engine start, and then felt another impact. She thought she had been run over, and she was run over.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what happened. I read that part.
They fucking run over, yeah.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
She heard the truck drive away after pausing for a moment, and she waited until she could no longer hear before she looked to see if the intruders were gone. She saw the truck go south on Greenwich Road. When the lights disappeared, she got up and began checking to see if any of the four victims were still alive. Holly looked at Jason first. She rolled him over and saw blood coming out of one of his eyes. She took off her sweater and tried to tie it around Jason's head to stop the bleeding. After looking at the others, Holly's decided that she needed to get help. Looking for the nearest safe place, she spotted a house with white Christmas lights in the distance. Now naked, barefoot, Holly ran more than a mile through the snow, crossing several fences, some which had barbed wire, to get to the house.
Good God.
It was approximately 2 a.m. on December 15th when Steve Johnson and his wife heard someone pounding loudly on their front door and ringing their doorbell. Johnson looked outside and saw a naked woman at his door. He opened the door, and the woman, Holly, told him that she and her four friends had been abducted, taken to a nearby field, and shot. She had blood on the back of her hair, and it was all matted as a result of some type of wound. The Johnsons let Holly inside, gave her blankets, and she called 911.
Can you imagine? Wow, yeah, I cannot imagine. God.
So one of the other things that this goes, I mean, this thing, this court document goes on forever and ever. I mean, it talks about everything, but I just wanted to review like the initial incident. So the reason why she survived was because she had a hair clip in the back of her hair. And the bullet
deflected.
It deflected the bullet. It still fractured her skull, though. So she was able to survive. And you know,
what kind of gun was it? Do you know?
I don't know.
And they say a lot in the story that they never really saw the guns, like what appeared to be a gun. So I'm curious to know if maybe they only had like a 22 or something.
It had to be small caliber.
No. They said I read a couple parts where she did see the different guns.
Yeah, but you can get a 22 pistol that looks like a 357.
They said they never saw the guns. I don't. Yeah. Anyhow, these guys were sentenced. They were sentenced to death, and then they had their death sentence
commuted.
Overturned on a technicality, and then I think it got and they're still on death row now. So then it got reinstated. Bottom line, one of the most horrific crimes that I know of, hometown connection for me, my whole family's from Wichita. And yeah, like I said, it just kind of changed my perception on the world, criminal justice, fucking everything. I mean, I just couldn't imagine being with, you know, a group of friends getting close to Christmas. One of my friends I know is about to propose to somebody. You have two fucking guys come in, rape and kill everybody. I mean, it's just absolutely insane.
This is a cautionary tale. You know, this is, they're coming to your house. They're going to do this. They're going to kill you. Fight back. Yeah. Fight back with everything you have.
Yeah.
You have to.
And this,
I read at some point on Wikipedia that they were considering it could have been a racial crime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're, so that's the elephant in the room is that, the intruders were African American, the Carr brothers, and the victims, they were all white. And there's been a lot of, anger from, Republican outlets or whatever, right?
Why Republican?
Well, no, I'm just saying, like right wing news organizations basically saying.
Or, I mean, is it a? Are you?
Can you finish? Can I finish the thought?
Yeah,
right wing.
Go on, Trump.
Hold on.
Yeah,
right wing news sources basically saying that a lot of the details behind this case were kept out of the media because it was a black on white crime.
But do they have to be a right wing?
I'm just telling you. In the article that I read, okay, it talks about like Michelle Malkin and other conservative outlets. Okay, you want me to pull it up? You want me to pull it up real quick?
Yeah.
What did Sean Hannity say about it?
What did Sean?
Hey, what did your buddy Sean and Bill say?
I don't know. All right, actually, it was from the fucking Wikipedia article, Brower. Let's see here. Criticism. Okay, here it is. Okay, so the victims were white and the Carr brothers are black, but the district attorney held that there was no prima facie. What's that mean? Come on, lawyers. Prima facie? Facie?
There was basically no evidence that it was.
Whatever. Evidence of racial crime. All right?
Yeah, they just happened upon this household of white people and decided to torture them all night long. And then murder them in cold blood out in the street after they told them they
would. So that begs the question, Did they ever...
Oh, and they robbed him.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Did they claim that at the end of the day, their attorneys, that it was a robbery-based?
I don't know. It's aggravated robbery to the... I mean, to the...
What was their initial motive, I guess, is what I'm saying. How do you go into a house where there's probably more than one car in the driveway and do this, and then you see there's this many people in the house, and you don't just run? It's pretty ballsy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay, conservative media commentators David Horowitz, Michelle Malkin... said that the crimes were downplayed. They felt that the national media suppressed the stories due to political correctness.
My friends, is confirmation bias. You looked until you found it. So thank you.
No. I told you it was right fucking here in the goddamn Wikipedia. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you found exactly what you needed to see.
I know. I'm just telling you. I'm recounting what I fucking read.
God, do you think? I know, but Dane, do you think they're the only ones that thought, head scratcher?
No, I don't. I'm just... Oh, God.
You could say some news sources or some people made commentary that there might be some other kind of nasty thing here that they're not discussing. It doesn't have to necessarily be, the right wing thing. It's this, you know. I mean, that to me, that immediate labeling is just continuing to foster the discourse. You know, I mean, this can't just be a crime. You know, I mean, like, as horrific as this is, how does politics find its crowbar its way in here?
I don't know, but
I mean, do you think their ideology had anything to do with the horrific crime they were committing? Maybe. I don't know.
I love getting lectured.
Not lecturing.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, if you feel like it's a lecture, then maybe you feel like you've done something wrong.
No, maybe I'm an idiot.
Creative Differences, season 2? Maybe.
Well, that was
back in 6 months after season 3.
Nobody's walking out. No. So this is progress. So I feel good about this.
This is a powerful, powerful story, man. Yeah. And
it fucking sucks, man. I mean, this is something that's kind of been on my mind for a very long time. And we've always been doing Houston-based crimes. And I just thought this is...
Well, we are going to branch out here in season 2.
Yeah. And, you know, it's related roughly to me because of my upbringing and that sort of thing. But I just wanted to...
So you actually live in Wichita, right?
Yeah. I don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, so the home, crazy stuff.
The home of BTK and so forth and so on. Anyhow, okay, so that's it. That's all I got. Any parting comments, guys?
Bummersville, man.
Yeah, it sucks.
No, I didn't realize all the details of this story.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about it.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and like I said, the source, court documents, 100%. It's not some fucking article.
Hope there's some prison justice going on with these guys.
Yeah. Absolutely terrible.
Right.
All right.
Well, let's get cheered up by...
Yeah,
Brower Hour.
Brower, you ready to bring the funny?
Yeah, but am I the only one that thinks Tom Selleck without a mustache is just a disturbing
look? I haven't seen it. Can you pull it up?
No. Have you... You've seen pictures of him without a mustache.
I never have, no.
All right. We'll talk about it in the next segment.
Okay.
Please. Please do.
We will be right back.
Mustache talk.
After this.
Hey everybody, we're back with Brower's Bayou section. So you know, I'm taking a tour around the country for a few things, and some things that caught my eye. Did you guys see
that? World traveler?
That's right. Did you guys see the gentleman on Wheel of Fortune earlier this week when he was asked about his family?
Oh yeah,
and he says, "I've been trapped in a loveless marriage for the last 12 years to an old battle axe named Kim. She cursed my life with 3 stepchildren named Star, RJ, and Ryan, and I have 1 rotten grandson." Davis's perfect deadpan delivery had the crowd and Sajak laughing appreciatively. I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he was joking about that, but I thought I could not. You know, I want to make sure that we get that quote in the archives for Beer, Blood, and the Bayou. So
I like it.
Yeah, that'll bring us to the top.
When people listen to this episode, you know, 15, 16, 18, 25 years from now.
That's right. We'll live on forever now.
So when
Ryan Seacrest is doing Wheel of Fortune at that point?
Probably.
So I want to say something about the city of Houston. Like, I know I shit on the city as often as I can. I look forward to doing it. It's a highlight of my week. But there are some things about the city that are kind of cool.
Does it rhyme with George Jetson's dog's name?
You mean Astro?
Astro? That's literally that rhyme. That's not rhyming. Yeah, that's
identical. Like does it identical with George?
Well, okay,
he's
so
he's so smart.
So you know, Houston is doing his very best to make itself a big presence in the world stage. You know, we've obviously hosted the Super Bowl. I don't know how world affecting that is, but you know, this is a hub for a lot of global travel. You know, we have international presence all over the place here. But one thing that Houston has really done a good job of standing out with is its presence in the LGBTQ community, and they are trying to get the organizers for World Pride to meet here in 2023. So I think that would be very cool and very great for the city.
Yeah.
Now, okay. That may sound kind of weird coming from Brower, but I think that the fact that the city is such a beacon in the group of cities for that particular community is wonderful. If you haven't noticed, cities that are very LGBTQ friendly, they're more creative, more vibrant, have better downtown lives, more fun. They're just culturally a better city, you know. And I think that is what, you know, that's one of the things that's going to help Houston get out of this horrific like nightmare of its position it is now. So
you're thinking about staying? Sounds like
because of this. Absolutely not. No, I'm on the first slow boat out of here, man. I can't wait to leave.
Real quick, sorry, before we go on, you were talking a lot last season about leaving the city.
Yeah,
some prospect somewhere else,
going to Porter or something, right?
Yeah, Porter, Texas, that's right. Or something. But well, whatever happened to that?
We had a little anchor baby.
We had an anchor baby.
Okay. Yeah, we had a fish or cut bait. We had to decide or get a doctor or
get a
moving truck. So we got a doctor instead. Okay. So, but
I'm glad. That's good news for all the listeners too.
We stuck around for a little bit longer. We'll see how long that lasts. So you know about this? Have you guys been following this contentious mayoral race here in Houston?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess really there's only two major contenders. You know, obviously the sitting mayor Sylvester Turner and old Tony Busby. Have you heard about the one of the things that they're trying to get Sylvester Turner on?
The $90,000 a year intern.
$95,000 a year intern.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you read his credentials, his response, Sylvester Turner's first response was, well, you look at his resume, you know, he's got his master's and whatever. So he's certainly someone that deserves a high caliber position.
Yeah.
The fact that this is an internship sounds a little gross. And the fact that there are city attorneys who make less than him. I think it's a little weird. And that's the problem. I have heard and I've read, and there's been some insinuation that there could be some other kind of nefarious activity here with Turner and this gentleman. So
they're dating.
I didn't say that.
Wait, what? No, really? Are you serious?
That has been
floated.
I think that's been kind of bandied about in a way.
What?
That's a little more. Yeah, it's definitely probably not true.
But romantic.
Yeah,
that's Brower's opinion, by the way.
Well, my opinion is it's not true.
Yeah,
that's not true.
Why is it during seemingly every mayoral campaign opposition always has a slogan that says "Clean up City Hall"? I see that all over Busby signs.
No idea.
Clean up City Hall.
Like, well, they want to clean it up.
The assumption is everyone in City Hall is corrupt. So
I get that, but they're always corrupt when they're trying to go against the sitting mayor.
Well, because you're trying to position yourself as the man of the people, and the man of the people are against the government.
It's just funny that it always.
I know it's always the same thing.
Always the same thing
on me.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Tony Busby. What do you guys think of him?
Well, wasn't he a Navy SEAL? No,
everything. He did it. Yeah. He did it all. You name it, he did it.
Yeah, I know. He made tons of money from the BP oil spill.
And he has a weird look, and I'm like, he doesn't trust confidence. You don't trust him.
No,
not at all.
Really? I don't know. I don't really get into like local politics.
Local. You live in the third largest city in the country.
I know, but like local politics.
That's fourth largest. A little less than local.
Fourth largest.
It depends on who you're asking.
Mm.
What do you do for the BP oil spill? Is he partners with Costner?
No. No, he represented, I think, a bunch of... he did some class action lawsuits against BP in the name of a bunch of people in Louisiana and so forth. I can't really speak about it intelligently because I don't know enough about it, but I do know that he did make a shit ton of money litigating against BP.
Every politician seems to be an ex-attorney.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to be.
Right.
Right? Because then you run into situations like Trump's got himself in right now.
Well, you're an excellent debater.
I know. But you got someone like Trump who's not a lawyer, and he doesn't... And I knew this was going to happen. Like, he's doing shit that he's ignorant of, right? He just doesn't know if certain things are legal or illegal, you know? He's trying to, you know, push people and make you know, be the normal business guy that he is, trying to make deals and realizing that he's breaking the fucking law.
You know, Trump can learn a lot from old James.
That's right.
What I do when I have an ass burner message to send usually by email,
yeah,
I'll type it up and I wait a minimum of 2 hours before I send it, sometimes overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, that email doesn't get sent.
Yeah, no, I do that sometimes too.
And he doesn't do that. It's immediately on Twitter.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, exactly.
You have to wait.
Yeah, you do, I think.
And if you still send it, then it's meant to be sent.
But, you know, the other thing is you're not Trump. I mean, the guy could get away with
it. Well, some people think I am a tycoon in the real estate, local real estate.
Not at all.
So I have one rental, and I
look at you, slumlord.
Oh, I really don't even have a room.
You slumlord.
Used to.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was an apartment that you had, right?
Yeah, it was just a one bedroom.
You've heard loft. Of Donald Trump? Have you heard of Josh James?
James. Funny story, really quick. Porn enthusiast exposes himself to a mom and her son in a dollar store.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay, now this is out of Iowa, but this I found this story interesting for
who wrote the article.
Let's see. Oh, Brian Nimitz.
From who?
It is from New York Daily News.
Cool.
A Southern Iowa man exposed himself to a woman and her young son in a dollar store because he saw that pickup stunt in a porn flick and thought the unsuspecting mom would dig it.
Wow.
Nicholas Shehi was charged with indecent exposure following that October 11th incident. The incident proposal occurred around 3 p.m. in Autumn, Iowa Dollar General store. The defendant admitted that he whipped it out, referring to his penis, the report charges. The defendant stated that he had seen someone do it in a pornographic film and believed the female patrons may respond to it sexually. The female patron, who instead responded to in an accusatory fashion, was shopping with her minor son, whose age was not specified in the report. Neither victim is named. Shahi, 23, was released on bond and is scheduled to go to court on Halloween Day.
Wow. Next, he will try to dress like a fireman or knock on someone's door.
So apparently you can't go into an apartment, fix a cable, and get laid.
Yeah. So another fun little interesting tidbit that James and I were discussing off air was as we heard, a blower, so you know, a young man outside using a...
Where was this going?
Yeah, waiting for a blower. Waiting for who?
Yeah, to say it faster.
A motor boating.
What are we?
No, a leaf blower.
Leaf blower.
Oh, okay.
He's using one of those backpack leaf blowers. Blowing down someone's street. And I had recently heard the other day that the standard 2-stroke motor on a leaf blower emits as much of a carbon footprint as. Driving like an old Buick 1,000 miles or something crazy.
You want me
like
to
that.
Read the exact?
But is this James
I went further.
James didn't believe me.
No.
And then he did one of those little sneaky things where he's like, I'm not going to tell you I don't believe you because I'm not 100% sure I don't believe you, but I'm going to look it up to try and confirm you so then I can tell you that you're wrong. But instead, he found out that I was right. What did you find, James?
Let me get my briefcase. I did 3 hours of research.
Yeah.
I found an article. Let me see where this is from.
Oh, God.
It's actually on Edmunds.com.
Edmunds.com.
Yeah, so it's probably
source of truth for everything auto-related. Right.
They stated that a 2-stroke leaf blower generates 23 times the carbon monoxide, which is nearly 300 times more than a crew cab pickup. To put it into perspective, the emissions of a half hour work of a yard work with a blower from a 2-stroke engine emits more carbon monoxide than a Ford Raptor does driving from Texas to Alaska.
Interesting.
Wow.
That's so in 30 minutes of using a leaf blower, you've emitted more of a footprint than...
Yeah, you thought it was just noise pollution. It's actually actual pollution.
It's pollution pollution.
It's pollution pollution.
Wow.
So the moral of the story is don't do 2-strokes or blow.
Or use a broom.
Or an electric one.
A broom handle, maybe. Sometimes that does a trick, too.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we talking about?
So, anywho, well, hey, big things coming from Beer, Blood, and the Bayou. I got to tell you.
Bus trip.
Road trip.
Bus trip coming up.
We've got a Christmas party, a bus trip.
Yeah.
A Splinter Cast coming your way very soon. Details to follow on the next cast.
A Splinter Cast.
That's right.
And that's when Brower can't show up to record because he's busy recording his Splinter Cast.
So definitely Beer, Bud, and the Bayou is expanding its operation. So yeah. You want more Brower and less Ralph, you're in for a treat.
You're going to get it.
So, you know, this has been a great episode, guys.
I'd say decent.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, certainly, you know, the subject material in the blood section was stellar. I mean, as terrible it is. It's very powerful stuff. So, James, you got a lot to live up to.
A lot of shoes to fill there.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
So, thank you so much for all the research you've done and everything you did. And, yeah, good stuff, everybody.
I guess we'll go ahead and cue the music.
Definitely. I gotta wake up.
Brower's happy about this podcast.
No, that's right.
You gotta wake up about what?
You have to wake up about boobies.
Yeah, that's right. Aren't you heading off up to
Nope.
Yeah, you are.
Dog mission.
Yeah.